The gospel lesson this morning is taken from the 24th chapter of Luke, beginning at the 13th verse. Would you please stand for the word of the Lord? Now on that same day that Jesus was crucified, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem, and talking with each other about all these things that had happened. While they were talking and discussing, Jesus himself came near and went with them. But their eyes were kept from recognizing him. And he said to them, "What are you discussing with each other?" They stood still, looking sad. Then one of them, whose name was Cleopas, answered him, "Are you the only stranger in Jerusalem who does not know the things that have taken place in these days?" He asked them, "What things?" They replied, "The things about Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet, mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how our chief priests and leaders handed him over to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we had hoped," don't race past those words, "but we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. Yes, and besides all this, it is now the third day since these things took place. Moreover, some women of our group astounded us. They were at the tomb early in the morning, and when they did not find his body there, they came back and told us that they had indeed seen a vision of angels who said, 'He is alive.' Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see him. Then he said to them, 'How foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have declared. Was it not necessary that the Messiah should suffer these things and then enter into his glory?' Then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them the things about himself in all the scripture. As they came near to the village to which they were going, he walked ahead as if going on. But they urged him strongly, saying, 'Stay with us, because it's almost evening and the day is now nearly over.' So he went in to stay with them. When he was at table with them, he took bread, blessed and broke it, and gave it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he vanished immediately from their sight. They said to each other, 'Were not our hearts burning within us while he was talking with us on the road, and while he was opening the scripture to us?' That same hour they got up and returned to Jerusalem, and they found the 11 and their companions gathered together. They were saying, 'The Lord has risen indeed, and he had appeared to Simon.' Then the two told what had happened to them on the road, and how he had been made known to them in the breaking of the bread." What a joyous moment that was. But there were some things before then that they had to go through. Please be seated. This account is one of my favorite in Scripture because I think it is Luke's great promise to us about Christian worship. Think about the four-part movement of this narrative. The two travelers were met on the road. They had the scriptures open. They shared a meal that revealed the identity and the presence of God. And then they were sent out to live and serve the good news. That strikes me as a parallel to the worship that we do each week. Gathering, word, meal, and sending. So just as John closes his gospel with the words of Jesus to Thomas, Here Luke tells us a story about the disciples that is really a story that makes a promise in Christian worship. We will be encountered by the risen Lord. So that's one reason I resonate to this account, but also I resonate to it because of the four words that just popped up right in the middle of the scripture. Four words, I think, that are among the most heartbreaking but realistic in scripture. But we had hoped. But we had hoped. So much is said in those four words, as they speak of a future that is not to be, a dream that had created energy and enthusiasm but did not materialize, a promise that created faith that provided to be in turn false. It's not just the tragedy of what happened that hurts, but the gaping hole of all that it could have happened and didn't. But we had hope. I love those heartbreaking words, not because I enjoy wallowing in dark or sentimental emotions, because they ring true to my life. They are not the only truth, of course, but there is much in this life that is beautiful, daring, confident, inspiring, and more. And all of that deserves our gratitude, for sure. But there is also disappointment, heartbreak, and failure. And all too often, we tend to gloss this over in our church. Or if not gloss it over, at least feel the pressure to move by it too quickly towards some kind of resolution, fleeing the cross-like experience of life to the promise of resurrection. And not only in church, but also in our daily life. A friend shares the news of the death of a sibling, and we sympathize for a moment, but change the subject. Or a colleague shares disappointment at not getting a promotion, and we remind them, well, at least you have a job. Or we see an acquaintance we know has just gone through a dreadful loss, and we avoid him or her altogether because we just don't know what to say. We don't mean to be callous or insensitive. We're just at such a loss with loss. We feel inadequate to the task of confronting the darkness of our lives and of this world. So we flee to the light in denial. In church, this pension is almost pernicious. Perhaps that somewhat understandable. We are, after all, a people of the resurrection. And so when reading this story, we often hurry to the burning hearts part of the narrative, celebrating with the disciples their encounter with the risen Lord. But just as before there is resurrection, there is always cross. So also I'd say that before there are burning hearts, there are broken ones. Can we be a place that welcomes broken hearts? That sounds easier than I think that it is. Because I'm not talking about treating our broken hearts as a means to an end, you know. Let's acknowledge the cross so that we can get right on to the resurrection. Rather, I'm talking about recognizing that part and parcel of being human. Being broken. There was a lot of pain beneath those four words, but we had hoped. And too often we miss that. And so it is to these broken-hearted disciples that the risen Lord comes. He always does. Walking along with us on the road, astonished that we don't see as we ought, teaching us the scriptures that we might understand, sharing his presence through bread and wine, and granting burning hearts that bring us back to reality. But all of that starts with broken hearts. And our job is not to get people to admit their darkness or to own their own hurt. Those who are not ready to do so won't be persuaded. And those who carry this with them daily don't need to be convinced. Only invited and allowed. Invited and allowed to share their disappointments that the cancer returned, the addiction wasn't overcome, the beloved one died, the lover betrayed, the child ran away, the job that didn't materialize, the congregation disappointed, the family hurt instead of help. And so on and on, you know the stories in your life. They only need to be invited and allow to grieve a future that will never be, in order that they may possibly hear and receive the future that God has created and prepared for them. When they are ready to hear, they will hear. When they are ready to see, they will see. But we need to be arm in arm with those who grieve. There are two truths about broken hearts and burning hearts. The creation of space so that we may know and be known. Trust and be trusted. Listen and then speak. Given our penchant as Easter people to sound the burning hearts of resurrection, perhaps this week we might make a little extra room for the brokenhearted, including ourselves. Trusting that the Spirit of God will set those hearts afire in God's own time. Now that takes a lot of trust and a lot of work. I can't do it on my own, but I can with you. Let's hang in there together.